Hello and welcome to India Reset, a Financial Express podcast with focus on the ESG imperative. The ESG imperative is organized by the Financial Express, where Dr. Mukund Rajan engages in conversations on the ESG imperatives with thought leaders and drivers of change in this arena. Mukund Rajan is the chairman of eCube Investment Advisors, a first-of-its-kind platform created in 2019 to catalyze ESG changes in corporate India. Prior to this, he held a number of senior executive positions through his 23-year career with the Tata Group, where he served as the first brand custodian of the Tata Group, chief ethics officer, chairman of the Tata Global Sustainability Council, and member of the Group Executive Council at Tata Sons. Dr. Rajan's third book, Outlast, How ESG Can Benefit Your Business, co-authored with Dr. Colonel Rajiv Kumar, has just been published by HarperCollins. Now, over to Dr. Rajan.
Hello and welcome to this online fireside chat organized by the Financial Express. My name is Mukund Rajan, and I'm delighted to bring you the next edition in a series of important conversations arranged by the Financial Express with key influencers in India on the ESG imperative. My book, Outlast, How ESG Can Benefit Your Business, argues that a focus on ESG can help businesses to build resilience, gain competitive advantage, and achieve greater returns in the long run. My guest today is Meher Padamji, the chairperson of Thermax. And in conversation with her, I'm looking forward to getting her perspective on the ESG imperative. Thermax, of course, is well known for a wide range of engineering solutions it offers across sectors, including energy, environment, and chemicals, both in India and overseas. Thermax is expected to be a big beneficiary of the increasing focus of corporate India on ESG, with offerings in spaces like waste heat recovery, waste to energy, biomass plants, flue gas desulfurization, and water treatment, and the list goes on. So welcome, Meher.
Thank you very much, Mukund.
Let me start by asking you, Meher, why do you think there is so much more interest of late in environment, social, and governance, or ESG?
So I think, first of all, E, S, and G are being clubbed together. But if you ask me, I think the one that is really getting the most focus today is the E, the environmental aspect. And I think as industry, we've always looked sort of internally in terms of how to become more efficient, how to become more profitable, how to look at shareholder value. I think for the first time, we are in some ways being asked as to how we are going to be responsible citizens of the world. So it's just not an internal focus, but an external focus on all stakeholders, including the planet, including society. So it's a shift in mindset. It's a shift, I think, right from the top of an organization, percolating downwards and along its entire ecosystem. And I think the focus on E is so strong today, perhaps because investors, pension funds, credit rating agencies, all these people are in some ways pulling or demanding that we actually look at the environment. Also, let's face it, today with technologies advancing, return on investment for environment-related products and services has become that much more beneficial to companies. And so with this huge pull or this huge demand, I think the E part of ESG is coming into focus. It's sad, but I think the S and the G, it has a long way to go. And maybe we can talk about it later. But even on the environment side, of course, today we are looking at the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years perhaps. We'll have the biggest impact as far as environment is concerned. We have such a huge coastline. And therefore, things like really, really huge risks, like, say, migration of people, I don't think we're really thinking about it. How is it really going to impact society? How is it going to impact industry? These are things that perhaps are some time away. But even on the E side, these are things that we need to really think about.
Thank you. I think that is very eloquently put. And you're highlighting the fact that this is going to become an even more important agenda going forward. And on the social side, I think we have a question that's coming up for you on that. But before I go to that, one of the big changes we're going to see from this fiscal in India is, of course, the new business responsibility and sustainability reporting requirement, which SEBI, the public markets regulator, has mandated the top 1,000 listed companies to develop and create. What impact do you think this is going to have on corporate India's ESG agenda?
Yeah, I think first of all, bringing in a uniform code like BRSR is a good thing, in the sense it will bring some measurable indicators where everyone will be looked at like on the same page. Yeah, so that's a good thing. Of course, there are some 103 disclosures. Pulling that all together will probably be quite a Herculean task for companies. But I think it's a good thing. I remember when CSR started so many years ago, I was really not for it, because I said you can't mandate people to be socially responsible. It has to come from the heart. But I am really happy to see that initially, perhaps it was a lot of tick marking. But I think today, genuinely, companies and people, many, many companies are looking at CSR and not just as a tick mark, but making a difference to society. So I think like that, perhaps BRSR will come in initially as a tick mark. But I think if people genuinely go in with some of the questions, and I was looking at some of the questions of BRSR, I mean, they talked about slavery processes or slavery policies, a disclosure on modern slavery process. And I thought to myself, I mean, how stupid, this doesn't even apply to us, to people in India. And then you think of how many people do we employ, maybe through our third-party contractors, less than minimum wages, working more than 8 hours a day, not having the ability to speak or complain about it, they are bonded labor. So in some ways, if you would redefine the word slavery as bonded labor, perhaps it just sets us thinking about, do we really have that within our larger ecosystem? We also need to, in some ways, define what we mean by employees. If we define it purely as people who are on our payroll, then one set of measures will come out. But if you define it far more broadly to the whole ecosystem where we can influence some practices, then I think we'll find very, very different measures. So overall, I think BRSR is a very good thing. I also believe that, you know, when IFRS started many 25 years ago overseas, and India adopted it 10 years ago as Ind AS, I believe IFRS have also come up with international sustainability standards. They've come up with a draft. So possibly BRSR is a start in the right direction, but over a period of time, I can see us probably moving to these international sustainability standards.
Quite right. I think that is the intended direction. Hopefully there will be convergence that we will see across standards, across countries.
Yeah, that's another thing. I hope we have one standard for the whole world, you know, because I mean, having this GRI, then IR, now BRSR, then integrated sustainable standards. I mean, then you, in your annual report, you have your MDA, you have your director's report. I mean, it's really quite a hodgepodge of many things. So I really hope we have just one that integrates it all, such that investors and whoever, whichever stakeholder wants to look at an organization, you can pick up any annual report and really look at it.
Quite right. And I think as an international company, you're obviously subjected to these requirements in each jurisdiction.
Absolutely.
It can make life quite complicated. Thank you. My next question is actually related again to the public markets and the role particularly of large institutional investors. So in India, the insurance companies, the mutual funds, the pension funds are all now covered by stewardship codes, which emphasize ESG. And I'm curious, as a listed company yourself, what kind of influence do you see these investors exercising in really moving the ESG paradigm forward in our country?
You know, I think they do have a role to play. As I mentioned earlier, it's that pull model or the pull demand. It's not just them, but it's also our customers, especially overseas, who are demanding that of their suppliers in countries like India. And so it's like a cascading model of a pull or a pull demand, which I think is good, because it will encourage all of us to disclose in a manner that allows everybody to be treated on par, and therefore to see where the funds or where investment will go. And also, you know, my only question with this is that this is fine with listed companies, but But what happens to large family businesses which are non-listed? And how do we get them to be part of the whole game? It's a question that I have in mind. And many family businesses world over are unlisted. So with listed companies, this is fine. But ultimately, unless all of us get together and everyone partners with each other to play a role, it's not going to happen. So that's a question that lingers in my mind.
So actually, let me build on that, because I assume that there will be some amount of demand and pressure that comes from simply being part of the value chains of some of the bigger companies. You talked about the pressure that's coming from overseas, for instance, and of course, regulation and how that regulation extends to all companies, not just listed. So let me take that point forward in the case of Thermax itself. Your annual report says that you have over 2,400 micro, small, and medium enterprises, MSMEs as suppliers. And of course, the large majority of them will not be listed. How prepared do you think these kinds of companies, MSMEs, are at this point of time to tackle ESG challenges, particularly the imminent challenge of climate change? And what support do you think these companies will need to really scale up?
You know, I think big companies are struggling. So the littler ones are probably not at all in a position to tackle it. And again, the trickle effect, unless a customer asks its supplier and they ask their supplier and then their sub-supplier, you know, so the whole trickle effect, I think it really hasn't yet started, but I'm sure it will over time. And unless we as large companies help in terms of some sort of capability building, some sort of policies and processes that we put in when we are selecting a vendor or when we are rating a vendor, you know, unless that really comes in, and it's not, again, the E only, it's the E, S, and G, just as it is for the larger companies. So unless we start looking at these things, it's not really going to happen automatically. Having said that, Mukund, I genuinely feel that things like, say, energy efficiency is something that every MSME, every company can look at. Because I think energy efficiency gives you one of the highest returns on investment. Therefore, it doesn't require too much capex, but it gives you a great return. And so if people can start by looking at energy efficiency, which can give them that return on investment, and then move on to other factors, I think that would be helpful.
Makes absolute sense. So you've touched upon the S several times. Let me come to that. In September 2020, in the midst of the pandemic, your company embarked on what it describes as a social compact initiative. Tell us more about this very worthwhile endeavor to support informal workers.
Sure. I think it's sad, but it took the pandemic really to highlight what was always there, but it brought it to the surface. And I think when the lockdown happened in March 2020, and we saw hundreds and thousands of workers start walking back to their villages without food, without money, shelter, it really made many of us very sad seeing these horrible pictures on television. And so some of us came together and spoke to Dasra, the NGO, and said, can you help us to understand a little more about migrant labor? I'd never really known about migrant labor. And so they organized a series of events on Zoom and invited people, like-minded people, to just come and listen to them speak. And then we said, instead of pointing fingers at the government, on anybody else, we need to take responsibility. And again, take responsibility for the larger ecosystem. So not those that we define as just our employees, but much beyond that, where we have an influence. Yeah, and we can make a difference. So whether it's on our manufacturing shop floor or at our sites or even with our vendors. So how do we really make a difference over there? And so we decided to start something called the Social Compact. So this was started with a few like-minded industrialists that came together and said, let's begin this. And we said, let's hold ourselves accountable on six outcomes. So the first is living wages instead of just minimum wages. The second is safety, whether it be at our sites, again, on our shop floor, vendors, wherever. The third is health and social security. The fourth is similar pay for similar jobs for both men and women. So gender parity. The fifth is how do we have them get access to government entitlements, you know, like Aadhaar, health insurance, Ishram, all sorts of things. And the sixth is how do we upskill or reskill this particular informal labor force. And so it started really with a reflective tool. So NGOs like Ajivika Bureau and Center for Social Justice, people who have been working with informal laborers for years together, they came in and said, let's start with a reflective tool rather than an audit. They visited our manufacturing sites, some of our vendors and some of our sites. And it was quite revealing in terms of what they came across. I mean, for example, they said that, you know, on your shop floor, you have everything written in English. How do you expect your laborers to understand any of it? Or at some of our sites where we have women working, there were no separate toilets for women workers. Now, to be honest, Mukund, I've been to some of my sites. It has never even occurred to me. I mean, I think we've become so thick-skinned, blasé, I don't know what one wants to call it. But it doesn't even occur to people like us that here are women working. Where do they go to the loo? So I think it was just these things that really some contractors don't give appointment letters. So people don't even know that they are appointed by this contractor, you know, where they have some terms and conditions. So it just highlighted some of the issues that in some ways we take for granted. And I think that's where the whole social compact began in terms of how do we really make lives more equitable for these people. And so today, I think we have some 40 companies that have signed up to it, which is really a drop in the ocean. There are so many more that we'd like to get to. And this is where I feel that pull will really come in. If we can make the S of ESG, this could be really beautiful as part of the S. Today, unfortunately, all of us think that we can do CSR and get away with the S, or we don't have child labor, and so therefore we are complying with S. But I think if we can go a little further and include this part of SOCO under the S, maybe through SEBI, through credit rating agencies, you know, move it a little further and help more customers and more industry come in. Make them really believe that a responsible business is a successful business in the long run. So that's where we are.
Terrific. No, all power to you. It's a fantastic initiative. And thank you for refreshing candor in your answer. I think all of us have been on those journeys and there's so much you discover and there's so much more to be done. Yeah. Absolutely right. So I have another question. This is the second last of my questions and one final one after this. Again, related to employees, and certainly the ones on permanent roles and perhaps the ones beyond that. How do you engage them in the company's ESG improvement journey?
So for Thermax, ESG in some ways is part of our core. I mean, we've probably been practicing environment, a little bit of social governance without necessarily calling it ESG.
Quite right.
And as far as the E part of it is concerned, it's our business. I mean, we manufacture heating equipment using different kinds of biomass, waste biomass as fuel, or solar energy, or giving water recycle, or using a technology instead of reverse osmosis, can we use a technology that makes it more efficient in terms of the wastage of water? So we are constantly looking at ways because that's part of our business model. I remember we had a discussion at the board about 12, 14 years ago when we wanted to bring in a new business model, a build, own, operate business model. And many on the board said, yeah, you can sell steam, but include coal. It's okay. You know, whatever brings you a quick return on investment. Mm-hmm. And I remember some of us mentioning, no, let's make it green. Let's keep it as green steam. And I'm really happy that we stuck to our guns because even though you don't get a high return, especially initially, I'm happy that we're doing something for the planet. And in some ways, it also sends a strong message down the line with regard to employees that we mean business. We are also looking in terms of environment on how do we do energy transition for our customers. So all our employees are involved in coming up with products that help customers transition in terms of their energy. And so, as I say, it's really part of our core business. So in fact, if we don't do it, we will perish. So we had better look at it very strongly. And of course, on the S side, as I mentioned, social compact. But social compact is not just something that is like a malampatti, you know, that is just like from the outside. It's now bought in by the board and the MD and the senior management, trickling down now slowly within the organization, such that every person in the organization, whether it be your procurement head or whether it be somebody at site or your head of manufacturing, whoever it be, you know, really believes in it and makes it happen. So we are trying to make SOCO very much a part of business as usual, because unless that happens, it won't be sustainable, you know. And of course, the governance part of it, I would say, really, thanks to my grandfather, my father, it's been very strong within the organization right from the start. My father always believed that profit is not just a set of figures, but of values. And so the kind of values that he, my mom, believing that business cannot survive in a society that fails. And so doing a lot for society. So all those have really been sort of cornerstones of the kind of culture and the values that we've got within Thermax. And maybe one last thing, I read somewhere and I love the saying that business has to be based on growth and profits or else it will die. But if business is based solely on growth and profits, then also it shall die, for it no longer has a reason for its existence. And I think that's so true. We can't just depend on the top and bottom line today. Today, business is really about being responsible.
Right, right. So my last question, Mayor, you talked about the way in which the employees bring into the company the voice of the customer. And obviously that requires a lot of innovation. So my final question today is, in the quest for ESG improvement, how relevant is R&D spending in particular for Indian businesses and within your own firm? You know, the typical issue we hear about is a trade-off between seeing it as a cost and really creating opportunities. Some of them may be in the long term only, for additional margin creation through the investments in R&D. So how important is this for Thermax?
As I mentioned, Mukund, this is really our core. So in fact, R&D, engineering, manufacturing, solutions that help in terms of the transition of energy for ourselves as well as for our customers. That's our business. And so R&D plays a huge role in it. I mean, starting with 50 years ago, 55 years ago, when we started the company and building it to where it is today. Earlier on, I think coal as a fuel was about 50% of our top line. Today, it's probably less than 15% or even lower than that. And this constant move towards green is something that we are constantly asking ourselves and partnering with customers to make this happen. Because unless we partner with, say, a steel manufacturer or a cement manufacturer and see how their technology is changing rapidly, we will not be able to be of value to them. So we have to partner each other very strongly in today's day and age in order to make this happen. And talking about investment today for a longer term profit, 100%. I mean, again, part of our business model, whether it was with the green steam that I spoke about a little earlier, we decided to go along with it irrespective of the fact that it wouldn't add to our top and bottom line initially, because 10 and 15 years ago, people were still not wanting to make that move. You know, that move has really started in the last few years. Or even, I would say, SOCO. SOCO is an investment today, hopefully for something that benefits humanity, but also benefits the company long term. So I really feel that a responsible business is a successful business in the long run.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mayor. That's about all the time we have today. The ESG landscape is changing swiftly. And as we heard from Meher, this offers many ways in which forward-looking businesses, including small and medium enterprises, can leverage their capabilities to shape the market and listening to the voice of the customer gain competitive advantage. And certainly business as usual is not going to be an option going forward. There will be a clear reset thanks to the new ESG paradigm. We will have to leave it there, I'm afraid. But thank you so much, Meher, for your time.
Thanks.
The passion you bring is so obvious. It's been wonderful. And it's clear that you enjoy what you do. So it's fantastic to see. So thank you so much. Thanks for being on the program. And thank you, viewers. And goodbye for now.
You were listening to India Reset, the ESG Imperative, a Financial Express podcast where Dr. Mukund Rajan engages in conversations on the ESG imperatives with thought leaders and drivers of change in this arena. Today's show was produced by me, Anantnath Sharma, and edited and mixed by Suresh Pawar. You can listen to this show on the Financial Express website and app or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you're listening to this show on Spotify or Apple, don't forget to leave a rating. It will only help us get discovered by more people. If you have any feedback, do write into us at podcasts@indianexpress.com. We'll be back with another episode of India Reset, the ESG imperative, very soon.